don't have, our capital stock hasn't been destroyed. Our human capital stock is ready to get back to work. And so that there are lots of reasons to believe that we can get going way faster than we have in previous crises.
But I just
like cattle to the slaughter. That's what they mean when they say human capital stock. And it's a mask off situation, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. We're getting to the point where they're just starting to be open about their disdain for us because, well, what are we going to do about it right now, right?
Yeah.
We don't have any real power structures of our own in place, so they can just literally say or do whatever they want to us at the moment.
Mm-hmm. It's just like we've talked in like previous episodes about just like the callousness of it, and it's just like they're not even pretending anymore. They weren't pretending so well before, but it's just like this week, just human capital stock of workers. And they are just, they're gearing it up more and more as more and more states open to get us all back to work. And that's just absurd to me that like that only got played for one day because the news cycles are so fucking crazy these days that we forgot about it. And by the way, hello and welcome to the show.
Yep, welcome. Thanks for tuning in. It's, this whole, everything's been so unpredictable lately. Twitter's blowing up over a couple big things. Just more examples of, you know, it's not just the oligarchs that are trying to beat us down. It's, we've got people fighting against each other when we should all be uniting, but you know, neoliberalist indoctrination has just been so successful that we've been able to normalize a whole lot of shit, a lot of bad shit. As far as COVID news goes, anyway, the stock market went up. I mean, so you know, that's a plus for the human capital stock. That's fantastic, and it's only going up because, like you mentioned, the states are opening back up, and phase two, second wave be damned, we're going to continue making money for the shareholders because we're expendable at this point.
Yeah, we're expendable at this point. Yeah, 102,000 deaths. I thought we were going to hit that 100,000 mark on Memorial Day. I think they kind of just held that back for a couple of days and it just kind of jumped up. But that's the official death toll of United States citizens at this moment at 527.
Yeah. And I guess every country is undercounting their, infection cases and death rates and whatever, and that's kind of to be expected just for propaganda purposes at the very least. But it reminds me, I actually wrote about this today at work a little bit. There was a new, so the CDC has been kind of silent about releasing new numbers for like weeks, a month and a half or so, and of course the right is just super outraged about it. It's like, oh, it's another institution we can't trust, just trim the fat, whatever. It's CDC has always been a little bit questionable, but by and large they're like fairly reputable. So they released a new count of healthcare workers who have been infected with COVID and who have died from it as well. The infection is about 62,000 of healthcare workers are infected. And about just under 300, it's like 295 or something, have died from it. And when I was doing a little more research to write this this piece at my workplace, I came across a Twitter account. It's really interesting. It was created in, and I'll find the link, we can post it in the show notes. It was created in February of this year, and it's basically all it does is it tweets out, you know, every single healthcare worker who has died from COVID-19 in America, anyways. And this account has about 850 tweets, a little bit more. And I kind of scrolled through. Most of them are just kind of documenting healthcare worker losses. Now, some of them are... And I think this is where the discrepancy comes in between like the 300 from the CDC and about the 600 or so that this Twitter account claims to have. Some of the documented on the Twitter account were previous healthcare workers, but maybe they moved over to advisory boards or like they retired and then came back for construction projects on hospitals and whatever, so maybe they weren't on the front lines, which is probably what the CDC was counting, but they were nonetheless still directly involved with the healthcare effort. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was really interesting to see, you know, that discrepancy. It's unfortunate, but you know, it just kind of goes to show that all of these numbers are being downplayed in one way or another. Maybe it's intentional, maybe it's just not, but
It's like we're probably not going to have like an actual number for years, and it's like that could be, you know, muzzling the CDC, or that could just be just like how jumbled and how unorganized everything is, especially, you know, with how the deep cuts that have happened to the CDC under Trump and all sorts of stuff like that. It's just like, you know, we're probably not going to have an accurate representation of like how severe this is until it's done for a few years, and we don't even know when it's going to be done. There's no vaccine. Just reading that like half the antibody tests that they're giving are giving false negatives. So we're still flying in the dark. And
we are.
And we don't know. And we're probably not going to know for a long time.
Yeah. And we mentioned in the earlier episode, it took years or decades for us to finally get like real numbers on the toll of the Middle Eastern conflicts that we, you know, like the civilian casualties. So, you know, it could be a really long time, so don't hold your breath for it, but
yeah.
You know,
and those counts on those numbers are just the, like the official, what can be stated, what can be accounted for on that. And it's just like, you know, we probably will probably, how do I put it? Just like, not know. And even when we have like a more accurate count, there's still going to be stuff that falls through the cracks, unfortunately.
Yeah, for sure.
And
terrible situation, but
in other news,
moving on to more terrible situations.
Yeah. It's just like one day hopefully we can give like a positive, uplifting show from start to finish, but as of right now, no. So another Karen strikes in Central Park, New York. This clip's been going around social media and everywhere. And you've watched it, haven't you?
Mm-hmm. Yep, I watched it.
Yeah. It's a woman with her being asked to put her dog on a leash and responding very, very poorly by threatening to call the cops on a black man named Christian Cooper, who is a former writer and editor for Marvel Comics, a Harvard graduate, and he was out there just bird watching, and he asked the woman, hey, can you please put your dog on a leash so he doesn't disrupt the birds, because that's his passion. He's out there watching birds. And instead of just being a reasonable person being like, oh, okay, I'll put my dog on a leash. No, she just puts her foot on that gas pedal and goes, I'm calling the police. Like, that's the short
distance of it. Yeah. It was ridiculous. It's just, yeah, I mean, there's even, I saw a couple other clips of him like people documenting him, like asking him about his bird watching career. It's like, wow, this is the guy. Like, of course he's going to be carrying around, you know, camera equipment or whatever. I don't, maybe this lady thought this was like going to be her big claim to fame or some stuff, you know. He's just carrying his camera equipment, bird watching, and it's, oh, it's time to make a scene. And it's like, insane.
Even in, even when he asks her, I don't sense any, like, completely cordial, just completely cordial of just like, please, will you put your dog on a leash? And she's just like, she just loses her mind. And, like, the thing that came out a couple of days later after this happened was that she's a liberal. She donated to Barack Obama, and this go around, she donated to Mayor Pete. She works in assets management, working with insurance and pensions. And this isn't just some silly redneck woman in Kentucky in a Walmart parking lot with a MAGA bumper sticker on her Ford SUV getting all weird about a person of color asking her to do something. This is a white liberal woman who's donated to liberal causes, or at least candidates, and she lost her mind and went and sounded just like a MAGA Karen to me, of being like, I'm calling the police, oh, blah, blah, blah.
There, and, there was this Central Park, New York, nonetheless.
Yeah. Central Park, New York. Yeah. And New York police already have enough going on. And she's basically wasting their time with her racism.
Yeah. There's so much more that, you know, we'll get into bad things police are doing in a second. But, you know, listen, not all cops are bad. And they've got a lot of work to do with, especially with New York City being the first really big epicenter of COVID-19. They're still getting their shit together. And this woman decides that now's the time to, you know, whatever, exert her racism, try to get a claim to fame. Like, it. So whatever the case is, the aftermath is that she lost her dog. Mm-hmm. And she got fired from her job.
Mm-hmm.
And did she give an apology video? I think, I don't know if it was like to the press.
She did give an apology. It was kind of weak. I don't remember how she worded it, but it was kind of weak, in my opinion. Just like all of her actions, you know, were uncalled for. Even just how she handled her dog. I'm like,
yeah, that was another thing, because she was just like yanking it up by the collar,
and
the dog was like clearly uncomfortable and unhappy. Like, she was like yelping and barking and stuff, like, she just didn't care.
Yeah, she didn't care. She was more concerned with calling the police on somebody who was watching fucking birds and asked her nicely to put her dog on a leash so he could continue watching birds. And it's just apparently she got the dog from a Cocker Spaniel rescue and she has surrendered it back to that rescue.
Well, at least the dog is getting a better home.
Yeah. And Amy's going to have a little bit of a hard time for a little while. And, you know, this could have been avoided if she just would have just even if she felt uncomfortable with her just like maybe closet racism, just put the leash on the dog and go somewhere else.
Doesn't take that much more effort to be, you know, a decent person and just be like, okay, you know, give people the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
Don't assume that they're trying to, you know, do something bad to you. Like,
The dog was supposed to be on a leash anyways. according to the rules of the park, the dog was supposed to be on a damn leash anyways.
Especially with this virus going around.
Yeah, so much entitlement right there of just like, one, not even listening to the rules of and being completely disrespectful of somebody asking you to do the right thing. And then calling the cops on that person. And then saying, a black man's harassing me, blah, blah, blah. No, just put the put the leash on the dog, walk away. Like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it is. And this is kind of the same mentality, this kind of social irresponsibility with when, you know, people refusing to wear masks. Because it's like, well, you're not going to trample on my rights. It's like, okay, well, okay, you're technically free to do whatever for the most part. But where's your sense of social responsibility? Why don't you care about random people that you don't personally know? And even then, there are so many people who don't even think it's necessary to wear a mask to maybe protect their families a little bit more. You know, it's completely irresponsible.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's not the only horrible thing that happened this week to a person of color. George Floyd. That video, I don't even want to play a clip of it just because it's kind of it's very heart-wrenching. But if you haven't seen the video, So I don't want to play the clip of George Floyd because it's heart-wrenching. But for those that have not seen it, George Floyd was a man in Minneapolis, Minnesota that was arrested. And that's not what it's about, but like what happened after his arrest, where he was pinned on the ground by an officer with the officer's knee in his neck, basically stopping him from breathing. And the officer, Derek Chauvin, basically kept his knee on George Floyd's neck as George Floyd is begging, saying, I need some air. I can't breathe. My stomach hurts. Even crying out for his mother. And the officer just doesn't even flinch, just keeps him down. And then you just kind of see George Floyd start to fade away. And it's
really disturbing.
It's really disturbing.
I could barely make it through the first couple of times I tried to watch it. I just had to cut it off.
Yeah. All the officers that were on the scene have been fired. But there is currently right now there are protests happening in Minneapolis, And officers are responding with riot gear and tear gas. The last thing I saw was the Target and the AutoZone, where cops had been camped out on top of the AutoZone, and them securing perimeters around the precinct and stuff like that. But it's not a good situation. And I think that this just highlights, like, the problem in our society is, like, weeks ago, white Michigan men and women marched into a state capitol with guns, into a government building with guns on their chest and in their hands, demanding to reopen Michigan. Most of them didn't have masks. Most of them weren't even social distancing. And the cops just stood there and just watched them. And now a black man has been killed. People are protesting the injustice of it, rightfully so. And the response to them is tear gas and riot gear. Like, if that doesn't highlight the, like, what's going on in this country, I don't know what does.
Yeah, it's insane. The former situation you just described, like, the police didn't even flinch when a bunch of white people with rifles, you know, stood in their faces. But suddenly, you know, some angry people throw rocks at the police cars.
Yeah.
Okay, well, now it's time for the tear gas and riot gear.
Yeah, now it's time to use that military style budget that the police have gotten since 9/11.
Yeah. And it's not just Minneapolis. There is, it's kind of like the whole Black Lives Matter movement is kind of rising up. There was a big, well, fairly big, not as big as Minneapolis, but there's a big protest in Los Angeles. It was much more peaceful. The only altercation was some protester throwing a skateboard at a police officer, and then right after that happened, a police officer decided to drive kind of erratically and ended up running over someone. Luckily, that person is okay. They were conscious. They gave a thumbs up when they, after the fact, and they're in the hospital, so they're fine. But even aside from that, there's, you know, in LAPD fashion, there's choppers all in the sky. They're, like, every single surrounding road and intersection is blocked off and barricaded by so many cop cars. They're making a big show of force to send a message that you don't get to protest about an injustice
unless you're a white person. Actual fucking injustice.
Yeah. Yeah. An actual one.
Yeah.
Not the perceived, I have to stay at home for 2 weeks, my government's taken away my rights. Like,
I gotta wear literally my mask.
Yeah. I mean, that's actually one of the stereotypes that foreigners have of us, is we're a bunch of fat, overly obese, lazy bunch of people who sit on the couch watching Netflix and eating Cheetos all day. And we can't even do that right for like two months.
We can't even fucking do that right. We can't even do that right. We have to be like, I don't need to wear a mask because I got the blood of Jesus on my side. And I got my AR-15 strapped to my chest. And fuck everyone else but me. It's just like, there's just so much talk. There's just so much toxicity in just like our culture right now, of where they can literally march into a government building heavily armed, and because they are white, older white dudes, that the cops just go, all right, well, I guess we'll just take it. And that's normal. They throw away the Blue Lives Matter things about fucking masks, but when somebody's pinned on the ground crying for his mother because he cannot fucking breathe, the cops literally go grab the riot gear, grab the tear gas. I don't know if you remember, like, the videos from Ferguson of just like where they started bringing out the water tanks and just blasting people and just like that craziness. And it's just like there's just so much wrong with all of this. Like you saw the Andy Beshear, the governor of Kentucky, like they made a doll and lynched him.
Yeah.
And there's been no fucking repercussions for those people, from what I understand, unless something has happened and I didn't notice, but people hung up somebody with the likeness of their governor and nobody batted a fucking eye about it. No cops did anything about it, from what I understand. And somebody gets choked out on the fucking pavement and everybody, all the fucking MAGA hats and every fucking neo-Nazi are on there on fucking social media just talking fucking trash, saying, oh, well, they're trashing their own community, blah, blah, blah. They're trashing AutoZone, Target. They're not trashing their own community. They're fucking trashing corporations. They're not trashing Main Street. Like, if they were trashing, like, locally owned shops, I'd be like, all right, I don't like that. But they're fucking looting shit, people that have a fuck ton of money anyways. And it's just like, nobody, like, what the fuck? Sorry, I just like, that's how I feel about it. It's just like it just makes me so fucking angry that all these fucking MAGA hat white conservative assholes are like, blue lives matter, blah blah blah, until I gotta wear a fucking mask. Oh, black people want to be treated equally and don't want to fucking die on the street. Oh, well, the cops are in the right on that one. I'm just like, no, you're fucking God.
Yeah, I feel you. It's it's insane. Especially, and speaking of the Andy Beshear thing, like, I was, you know, I mentioned in the first episode that I write conservative politics for part of my income, and I'm trying to get out of that. I hate it so much. But so I get to research all of this crap all day, and, you know, I don't know everything about it. But the Andy Beshear thing, like, sometimes I just find something that makes me so angry I can't even work for a couple hours, and the Beshear thing was one of them. It was, you know, they made a little doll with Andy Beshear's face printed over the face of it, and there was some stupid LARPy little sign they had over his chest, like Sic Semper Sippy or whatever. It translates like Latin for tyranny, or, you know, no tyranny anywhere, or some shit. Now, the people who put this up, and they hung it over like a tree in his front yard, front of his house. Where his
fucking kids could see it.
Granted, Beshear lives in a mansion. Okay, whatever.
Yeah, he does.
Oligarchy, fuck him anyways. It's not okay to just hang a figurehead of that person in their front lawn where their children are going to see it.
Yeah.
And
especially your fucking government that's trying to fucking protect you.
Yeah, right. And but they're so, you know, McConnell's from Kentucky, so he needs to run everything. But, and from what I understand, that the people who did this were protesting somewhere else nearby for like a couple of hours, and then they marched down to Andy Beshear's house and then did all this crap. They started chanting with megaphones like, hey, come on out, and we just want to talk, come on out. It's like, okay. And I kind of tweeted about this a little bit, but my big point was like, all right, listen, I get that Biden and the Democratic Party are pieces of shit. All right. They don't deserve a goddamn fucking thing from us. Okay. They are some of the biggest traitors to the American people in this country. I get it. So there's a lot of lefties mad about Biden, the Democratic Party. Okay. I feel you. Where I don't see nearly as much outrage over this kind of shit about the lynching, like the fake lynching of you know, Andy Beshear, like the governor. They did this to the governor of Michigan a couple weeks ago as well. They marched in front of her house in the middle of the night, protesting and chanting for hours. Okay, where is the outrage about the rise and the empowerment and Trump's endorsement of this kind of faux right-wing, like, proto-fascist militia shit? Yeah. And we're too worried about some brain dead candidate with brain worms who can't even finish a sentence, who like shits his pants during an interview. By the way, yeah. That happened today. Like, and we're more angry about that. And we're more angry about that than we are about the rise of the populist right. Like, we got to get our priorities straight. This is bullshit.
It's one of those things. It's just like they're getting crazier. And they're going to continue getting crazier. And if anything, COVID has shown us how insane they were. We knew how insane they were. But just the fact that they are losing their goddamn minds over putting a piece of cloth over their fucking face, or that they can't go to fucking Denny's, or they can't go to whatever fucking store they want to.
Or get a haircut, God forbid.
Or get a haircut, or get a fucking stupid tribal tattoo that, you know, all their other dumb fuck friends have. And it's just ridiculous to me. It's just like, you are right with that. Like, we need to show outrage of when they do, especially the far left. It's like, we do put too much focus on Biden, and I despise Biden. And we're going to talk about that in another show, but it's like, we do put too much focus on just like being anti-Biden and anti-Democrats. We need to highlight the problems of how proto-fascist they are, how like more violent and how more violent they are becoming. Like, I saw like people getting harassed for wearing masks on Twitter, where people are just like, somebody said something to me because I'm wearing a mask. What the fuck? I don't get it. And it's just like, why can't they just let mind your own business? I don't ask them. Like, when I see somebody with a Trump sticker, I'm like, oh, I probably would never want to fucking talk to them, but I'm not going to be like, hey, you fucking dumbass. No, it's just like, leave people alone. And it's just like, that's the thing, is they bitch and complain and say, they're fucking taking away my rights. They're fucking doing this. They're infringing on me. Censorship, blah, blah, blah. I'm just like, all you guys do is puff out your chest over every fucking goddamn slight. Like, even the smallest slights of, like I said, of just wearing a piece of cloth over your fucking face so I don't get your fucking spittle on some surface or some other person doesn't get fucking coughed on. How hard is it? It's not hard. Just calm down. But while we're talking... While we're talking about COVID.
Sorry. Yeah.
No, you're fine. It's an inconvenience. But before we get too ranty about the Red Hats, we're going to talk about something that a lot of the Red Hats believe in another one of our debunking of conspiracies. So there is a significant portion of like the Trump base. I'm not going to say, I don't have an exact number, but there's enough of it on Twitter and on like different MAGA groups and stuff like that, that they believe that the 5G is spreading COVID-19.
Yeah. I couldn't believe it when I first saw it. Oh my gosh. It's I don't know. I'm not like totally hip on the 5G thing. I know a little bit about it. The only thing I really knew about the whole 5G scare is from, I don't know, maybe it was like a couple months ago, I saw this video where they were like, okay, there's some like legitimate concerns of like what might happen when all the 5G towers go online, but it had nothing to do with like people dying. But then you get all these people with these like fake, oh my God, I think it was actually like a Project Veritas documentary, now that I think of it, where it was hilarious, where they have these like fake fucking EMF meters, and they're measuring the dangerous radiation coming from the 5G tower they're standing next to. And it's like, well, they don't explain how the devices work, of course, but
no, of course the big
scare is that, well, for now, because 5G isn't like officially online or whatever, Or is it? I don't know if it's like widespread.
It's starting to roll out.
Okay, so it's starting to roll out. Yeah, so their big fear is because they think it's that 5G is on the microwave spectrum of the electromagnetic spectrum. the microwave frequency, that's what I meant to say. Once the 5G towers go online in full force, it's just going to cook everyone's brain and everyone's just going to die. Yeah. And you have like whole city centers just wiped out like that.
Yeah.
And that was hilarious when I saw that. So, and they call them death towers, by the way, the 5G towers, which is incredible to me. But the transmitting of the virus was something new to me.
Yeah. Like there's two claims about 5G and COVID-19. That the first one is that it suppresses your immune system enough where it will make you more susceptible to catching coronavirus. And then the other one is that somehow these little droplets in this can travel via radio waves and infect you. Like, I have never heard of a virus traveling by radio waves. I'm by no means am I certified in any kind of medical field, but even I'm just like, when I read that, I was like, what the fuck? Like, you mean to
maybe
tell
in
me
Star Trek?
Yeah, something. In Star Trek.
Maybe there's like one or two episodes.
Like a little virus is attaching itself to your radio wave, going, yeehaw, I'm going to find somebody and infect. No. No.
That's not how physics works.
It's not how it works. It's not. There's no science merit to explain that. But the death tower thing that you were talking about, because of not only like the concern that our brains are going to be microwaved and fried when 5G rolls out, but now because they've attached COVID to 5G, that there's dozens of arson cases on cell phone towers. Like, people are fucking raiding cell phone towers. I hope that, I want to know what cell phone service they're using to where they're like, you know what, I'm going to go fucking raid this cell phone tower and burn it down, because I mean, they're going to lose service.
You know what, I actually have Cricket, and maybe that explains why Cricket service is so shit.
Yeah, because
coverage.
somebody's just fucking raiding the fucking Cricket towers. Oh god. But yeah, the only connection here is from what I understand, and I tried to look around, and just like the only thing I found where people were just like, oh shit, 5G is causing COVID, is that COVID-19 and 5G just started appearing at the same time. 5G networks started getting rolled out around the same time that the coronavirus has happened. And I'm sure that there is like, there's other connections such as Chinese technology and all sorts of shit, but I don't even want to waste my time on that rabbit hole. But yeah, if somebody tells you that 5G is going to give you coronavirus, just walk away, or just say you know what, put a tinfoil hat on yourself and say, well, I'm blocking the radio waves.
Yeah, there you go. Just mimic Alex Jones and you'll be good.
Yeah, oh no, fuck it. Just wear a motorcycle helmet everywhere and just be like, oh, it's not going to get to me because I'm blocking the radio waves.
That's right. There's actually, if you want to learn a little bit more about 5G, there's a million YouTube videos. If you want like a fairly short, concise explanation, there's a channel called ASAP Science, and they did a thing. Just search ASAP Science and 5G, mm-hmm. and you'll find it. It's a really basic overview, but yeah, some of these theories are hilarious to me.
Yeah, it's just like I keep on thinking that we might run out of material somewhere to talk about a conspiracy theory, there's a new one. There's a new one every week. And it's just like,
especially in these times.
Yeah, especially in these times where just something can just rapidly spread. I don't think we're going to run out of any source material to, talk shit about anytime soon.
Yep. So with the 5G out of the way, it's time to get into the main topic of the show, which we totally forgot to talk about, which is think tanks. This is something we are pretty, well, more specifically conservative think tanks, frankly, because they are more influential and frankly, probably a little bit more interesting. I don't know of a whole lot of documentation that really like exposes, you know, neoliberalist think tanks. I'm sure it exists. It exists somewhere, but I'm not aware of it. And frankly, you and I have both read the book Dark Money by Jane Meyer. It's a very good book that it kind of does two things, one of which is exposes the actual names and a lot of numbers and dates behind think tanks and conservative dark money groups that where billionaires can kind of funnel their money a little bit more anonymously to disseminate propaganda to keep us all a little bit more brainwashed. And the other part of the book is, well, it kind of like goes back and forth where she describes kind of the life experiences and the upbringing and really how the Koch brothers are central to the formation of this huge, huge spider web connection of conservative dark money interest groups. Talks about their upbringing and really kind of
the upbringing is it's interesting. The Nazi nanny's my favorite.
Yeah, that was, I did not see that one coming. That was very interesting. Yeah, it's definitely worth a read. It's a little bit dry, but it's the story behind the Koch brothers. It makes it more interesting. It's on audiobook as well if you're allergic to actually reading text like a lot of us are.
the Nazi, in your car.
Yeah, exactly. Or if you have a huge commute to work, that's a great way to pass your time.
Yeah.
It kind of centers around the two Koch brothers. I think there were four in total, but it's David and Charles who are the main orchestrators, and really Charles, which is the main orchestrator behind the formation of this dark money network. And we're just going to go over some of the big ones that are hugely influential and still continue to, you know, quote unquote guide society even to this day.
Yeah, the one that always comes to my mind first is the Heritage Foundation, founded by Joseph Coors of Coors Beer fame. It's good to know that his politics were as shit as his beer is. but they saw their big rise during the Reagan years, and much later, you know, the Koch brothers started donating money to them. Altria, which is formerly Philip Morris, Marlboro Cigarettes, started donating to them. That's how these ghoul tanks get to keep the lights on, is they have a bunch of billionaires that donate money to a bunch of quote-unquote policy wonks that, you know, write up insanity for that they pass on to GOP candidates and politicians. But the big thing about the Heritage Foundation the last couple of years is that it was Trump's, it was the basis, the argument that Trump used for his voter fraud argument. Like most of the information that he used to, you know, play up that voter fraud happened, part of the reason why, like, he lost the popular vote to Hillary despite he did, she beat him. But yeah, it's just like that's what they based a lot of their info on. And it's funny that the Brennan Center refuted most of that argument by stating that it used examples from 1948 and only 41 cases of non-citizen voter registration occurred in the study. And that most of the cases highlighted would be prevented by current voter laws. that kind of just kicks the shit out of the entire voting fraud thing. But especially with COVID going on, we have an argument for mail-in ballots. And of course, the Heritage Foundation not wanting any kind of structural change and wanting to keep the GOP in power have already started drumming up ways to pass on to the politicians that they support, which, by the way, all of its members that donate to the Heritage Foundation almost exclusively donate to the GOP. But what they're saying now against mail-in ballots is that absentee ballots are the tool of choice for fraudsters. So basically, if you want fraudsters to steal an election from you, mail-in ballots is the way to do it. And absentee ballots is the way to do it. And this is my favorite argument right here, is that voters will be intimidated if they have to vote in their own house because there will be no election official there to make sure that that intimidation does not occur. As if when people go around voting booths in this country and a big pickup truck drives by them with a Confederate flag, or you see a big burly Bikers for Trump or militiamen just camping out with guns around there, like, that's not voter intimidation at all. No, it's like, if anything, it would be less intimidating to vote for my house. Just check off a box and mail it. But it's like, that's not how the Heritage Foundation thinks. They're going to come up with any kind of argument that they can come up with to make sure that mail-in ballots and absentee ballots are going to be questionable. And like, especially with an election around the corner, it's going to be real interesting to see, like, the push for mail-in ballots and what the Heritage Foundation and the fellow GOPers are going to use as their arguments against it.
Yeah, it actually, talking about the mail-in ballots, this reminds me, I didn't put it in, we don't have it in the show notes, but there was a Breitbart article.
Oh, God.
By the way, before we get into that, Breitbart was so another part of this dark money network was what was his last name was Mercer, like Charles Mercer, something like that.
Yeah, Mercer, the Mercer family, basically the bigger the people that keep the Breitbart lights on.
Yeah, they, you know, they do keep the Breitbart lights on, and of course Breitbart is one of the most egregious examples of quote-unquote journalism this world has ever seen. They just, whenever they can't distort facts on their articles, they can't even properly cite the numbers from the sources that they're citing. When they can't do that and they have absolutely nothing to go on, they'll just make shit up and report on it as if it's like actual news. Like, oh, this is groundbreaking investigative journalism, Breitbart exclusive. There's one article that came out within the past week or so, basically claiming that there are entire boxes of mail-in ballots, full of mail-in ballots that were never counted, and they were just sitting around in the post office, and no one ever got around to them, and they were deliberately being withheld. And I didn't bother to read into the story because fuck Breitbart. But this is just one of the big narratives, is that you can't trust, number one, the election fraud, like you just brought up with the Heritage Foundation. This is a huge conspiracy. The actual evidence shows that it is virtually non-existent. But they're trying to pin that, oh, it's even more existent with mail-in ballot because, well, there's no oversight, and you can just kind of fake your name and do whatever. It's not as if these people are going to check against voting records or anything. Like, not to mention that committing voter fraud is a felony, and they're going to start claiming that illegals are going to do voter fraud by mail-in ballots. Like, okay, these people will get deported by doing that. Do you think people in the Trump administration era, illegal immigrants, are going to risk getting deported? Are you kidding me? After we've seen what happens in these ICE detention facilities from last summer? No, this is not going to happen. And if it does, it is the extreme minority of cases. This is not a trend. This is a exceedingly rare example of the what is not the trend. I've completely lost the word for it. I felt so smart for a second.
Well, what's so funny about the voter fraud thing is the last time that there was a case of voter fraud, it was in North Carolina, and it was a Republican doing it.
That's right. The North Carolina voter ID laws. Oh, that was so good. That was
projection. Egregious. It's always projection.
It is. That's the story with any kind of conservative or Republican narrative you hear. It's almost always projection.
We do it, so they must do it too.
But we're gonna sweep the fact that we do it under the rug and never report on it. We're just gonna lie by omission about everything.
But just be like, and if we are caught doing it and called out on it, we're going to do whataboutism about something else. We'll bring up Hillary's emails for the 100,000th time.
Right.
Yeah. Americans for Prosperity is another big one. This one is actually founded by the Koch brothers. So not only it's not like the Heritage Foundation, which the Koch brothers cut checks for years, but this one was founded by it in 2004. And its big claim to fame was it was a driving force for the Tea Party. And the Tea Party, like, they basically platformed the Tea Party with money, with politicians. We'll talk about one of the biggest ones that they did in just a moment. But they were kind of what caused the Tea Party to take power in Washington, especially with all the money that the Koch brothers do have, which they've had a lot. And one of the big politicians that they absolutely adored and they platformed and basically manufactured him was Scott Walker. And Wisconsin kind of became a battleground of conservative and progressive ideologies. And like Scott Walker was kind of a nobody until Americans for Prosperity started inviting him to rallies and events around Wisconsin and just kind of puffed him up and, fluffed him out. And next thing you know, Scott Walker became the governor of Wisconsin, where he, basically ran under the platform of union busting, cutting pensions, and all sorts of just nasty, your typical conservative things. And Wisconsin is still just like, I don't think they've quite recovered from the damage that Scott Walker did to them. And another thing that the Tea Party and Americans Prosperity did was they're part of the biggest resistors to climate change. That part of the people that pushed the myth of that it's not real, that even if it is real, it will hurt business and just destroy the American economy. And, it's funny because the Koch brothers are huge industrialists. And it's kind of funny with using the Tea Party. The Tea Party's just pawns to them. They're using the Tea Party to fight against any kind of regulation that will hurt their bottom line. And they fought really hard against Obama on everything, especially climate change. And it's all to benefit the Koch brothers. I'm sure the Koch brothers do believe in all of this stuff. But the Tea Party and the protesters are nothing more than just, useful tools to them, in my opinion.
Yeah, that really seems to be the case. But, at least the polar bears are enjoying the weather.
Yeah.
Even though they're not.
Yeah. Thank God that the polar bears get to be warm now.
Yeah, and actually, the scientific research shows that the polar bears are actually not enjoying it. They are being actively hurt by the changes in climate. So even that's a lie. Even that stupid little mascot that they threw around for a couple of years is a flat out just lie. And they were, if I remember, Americans for Prosperity also, of course, Scott Walker was a huge example, but the astroturfing of other conservative politicians in local elections especially, because that's where a lot of the power lies. I think that particular nonprofit was heavily responsible for the election of other conservatives in other states. They would run smear campaigns about their Democratic opponents, even if they were just flat out lies. But it didn't matter if you repeat the same thing long enough, same narrative, it's going to sink in.
Billionaire industrialists backing you up, you can put your tentacles in any local election.
Yeah. So it's more than just, of course, increasing their bottom line is a huge part of it. That's probably the main. You know, the virtue of selfishness kind of thing. I think they were big Ayn Rand fans too, by the way.
Oh yeah, they were. They are. They are.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's just like, I'm like reading Dark Money. Yeah, they absolutely believe a bunch of the shit that they push. But I'm sure at the end of the day that the first thing they're thinking about is that bottom line. And it's just like, it's so... Like the Koch brothers were power players for such a long time, and now Charles is the only one that's really a power player. Because the other one passed, and the younger brother, the other brothers are kind of not a part of it. One of them owns like a Western village, like owns a village that looks like a Western set somewhere. I can't remember where it is, but that's fucking hilarious to me.
Yeah, but the other two brothers are just like non-existent. That would be kind of fun, though, I guess, as like a fantasy. Oh,
just pretending you're playing Red Dead Redemption, the real game, every fucking day.
Yeah, like actually tie someone and drag them around the desert like IRL.
Yeah. Oh, shit, I need to fucking look that up again.
Do it.
I need like, to I hope, it. Yeah. I hope he like just pays people just to talk to him in Western voices. Set a spell.
Oh God.
Oh, that would be amazing. But anyways, another big one. This is the new big dog in my opinion. Turning Point USA. We've all seen their awful memes. We've all seen the size of Charlie Kirk's forehead. And it's just like they rose to prominence during Trump's campaign and after during Trump's presidency. Charlie Kirk founded it. I can't remember what year it is, but he founded it with the backing of Foster Fries, who's a very hard right Christian. But their memes are everywhere. Like they have clever, like they think they're clever memes of just like. Logic, and they even hosted a conference to train the next meme warriors for the right, which is pretty funny. And the Heritage Foundation sponsors some of their events. They've given platforms to, you know, they were kind of like when I first started noticing Candace Owens was because of Turning Point. Before that, I'm sure I didn't really know that much until she started, you know, coming around for on like JPEG and PNGs and like other memes on all over social media and Twitter. My favorite part of Turning Point USA is that they had a Black conservative conference, and Charlie Kirk, who is probably the whitest person I've ever seen, was the host.
Oh no! You figure they could have at least picked Candace for that role.
Yeah, they could have picked anybody. It's just like it's nothing but African American, you know, Republicans
Or Jesse Lee. Can you imagine Jesse Lee Peterson running that? That would be hilarious.
God. Yeah. It's just like you couldn't find somebody else to just, you know, talk about it, just to be the host of it. Why did you have to be there, Charlie?
The funny thing about Turning Point USA is because their whole emphasis on the meme culture and the meme warfare, well, that got taken advantage, or they got, yeah, they, that got taken advantage of by actual, like, neo-Nazis. So Nick Fuentes is a huge figure on the alt-right. Of course, names come and go with this alt-right community. But Fuentes seems to be the person who's trying to kind of re-coalesce the fringe extreme part of the internet as far as the extremist right goes. And at CPAC 2020, it's a conservative political convention, doesn't matter. And
spreaders of the coronavirus.
And spreaders, yes, they are, because no one believes in masks at these places. It's a myth at this point. And so Nick Fuentes basically... So the big thing about these alt-right people, these actual fucking fascists, is they don't even agree with their conservative allies. And so, and this was kind of prevalent in the past couple of years during conferences where you had a bunch of alt-right talking points and dog whistles, you know, during like Q&A sessions, and like, you know, the Turning Point USA people just didn't get it for a while. But this year, Nick Fuentes kind of like pissed him off, and he got kicked out of the conference, I think. But his followers decided to make some fake banners with a QR code to scam, saying like, oh, here's a free ticket. If you scan this code, go to this link and do the thing. Whatever. It's like a survey to fill out. It linked them to a Nick Fuentes video, where is a short two-minute little thing, basically talking about the Great Replacement conspiracy theory, how the immigrants are going to replace us all because our legislative bodies are allowing unchecked, untold amounts of immigrants to just flood our country and literally replace us and we'll be gone. So they trolled the shit out of TPUSA. It kind of shows that, like, the what's the saying, that conservatives can't meme? Well, it's true. They can't meme. They don't know meme warfare. They make really shitty memes. But, like, people on the left and young, hip people on the alt-right, they know how to meme much better than the you know, boomers who run these stupid conservative events. It's a stupid little power play, stupid little show of force, but to them, it means the world. Like, oh man, we trolled CPAC USA 2020. Like, okay, good for you. But to them, they're so insecure. That's the world to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like, the alt-right and even the alt-light, their memes, you know, are they're cringy to me still, but nothing's more cringier than when a 50-year-old boomer tries to meme.
Yeah, it's just kind of like, you kind of feel sorry for them after a little bit.
Yeah, I agree.
But but that's not all with these nonprofits that really, Charles Koch is kind of the master architect behind everything. And one of the big ones that has been hugely influential is really two of them, but they're both kind of the same thing. It's Donors Trust and Donors Capital Fund. Now, these set of organizations have been used by the Koch brothers and other wealthy billionaires, conservatives, to funnel their donations to other conservative political interest groups. And one of the big ones, kind of like we mentioned before with Americans for Prosperity, was climate change denial. So Donors Capital Fund, there was a report from The Guardian in about 2013 is when this came from, where $120 million were funneled into about 100 groups, maybe a little more, 100 groups that were basically climate change deniers. And this is just one arm of this network. There are so many other organizations like this. And of course, you know, by even if they can't disprove climate change, which they can't, but they can muddy the waters of the conversation long enough to where they can keep making a little bit more money from the oil industry, because the bottom line is primarily what they care about. Now, I found out about Donors Trust and Donors Capital Fund kind of inadvertently a couple weeks ago. Funny enough, through my workplace, there was a topic suggestion for, and it linked to an article which I forget the website. It was also funded by Donors Trust and Donors Capital Fund. It's like a college conservative website, basically talking about how I think it was like $100 million were being of foreign money was being funneled into colleges, like American colleges. So it's this big, you know, scare tactic of foreign entities being trying to influence our culture war, you know, try to spread their own propaganda and make us more sympathetic to communist China or Saudi Arabia or whatever. So I looked into this for a couple hours over a weekend, and I came across the source. The source of this $100 million being funneled into our colleges from overseas, what came from the Clarion Project. Now, the Clarion Project was founded, I don't have the date in front of me, I think it was 2007 when it was formed. And the big claim to fame with the Clarion Project is that it claims to be against all forms of ideological extremism. In the big three ones are Islam extremism, fascist extremism, and Antifa extremism. Now, we could both go on rants about how the right doesn't actually understand what the fuck Antifa is.
Oh God, I know.
It's, yeah, we can probably talk about that another time. Suffice it to say, Antifa in this context is being used as a broad brush to paint the entirety of the left with. Well, of course, extremism, so, you know, of course it's the socialists. And they completely distort what the left stands for. So they basically pit Antifa and fascists against each other for, I don't know, optics, to pretend that this Clarion Project organization is a, you know, it's a fair mediator of all forms of extremism. This is a smokescreen to promote their extremely anti-Islam, really just anti-Muslim in general, stances. And the biggest example of this, and we'll get to how this is connected to dark money in a second, the biggest example of this is on their website, they have a page dedicated to, what is it called? Extremist organizations across the United States. And it's a map. And it's basically, oh, well, look, that's a good thing, right? These people are trying to expose extremists where they are and how to look out for them. Okay, every single one of them is Muslim. There's not a single neo-Nazi on here. There's not a single anti-fascist on here. It's all Islam groups. Granted, these may be extremist groups, that's fair, but that's all that's being represented here. So it's a little bit funny. So the big formation of the Clarion Project seems to be from 2007, when Obama was running for office, and I'm sure you remember this more than I do. there was the whole narrative about how Barack Obama was like an Islamist and he wanted to commit jihad against America or whatever.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And that was like the entire thing that even his Democratic primary challengers kind of like dog whistled that a couple of times. It's one of those that, like, I need to find that clip, but I feel like there's a clip of Hillary not outright saying it, but entertaining the thought of it.
Oh God, figures she would jump on board it too.
Mm-hmm.
But so there was this whole movement to keep Obama from being elected. Huge part of it was on the right, and it was around this time when all these dark money organizations were kind of at the height of their power, at least like that we know about. So the Clarion Project got, between the years of 2007 and 2009, received about $21 million, which was 96% of their total funding during that period of time. And they got it from Donors Capital Fund.
Mm-hmm.
Which is directly tied to the Koch brothers, and I think maybe not, you know, Americans for Prosperity level, but it was heavily connected within that network. And so the Clarion Project has put out a couple of documentary/movie things. Every single one of them is anti-Islam. There's no exception, of course. But the big one for, you know, 2007, 2008, because Obama was running, most of this money went to the production and the distribution of Obsession, Radical Islam's War Against the West. And it's basically an Islamophobic campaign, but more specifically was to discredit Obama and keep him from trying to be elected. And even the producer of Obsession had direct ties to two anti-Obama PACs. There was no bias. There was no, like, hidden thing here. This was explicitly to keep Obama from trying to win the presidency. One of them was Move America Forward, and the other was Our Country Deserves Better, which the website says it has one objective: to defeat Obama. So it's just another example of how these dark money groups heavily influenced. Now, you know, doing it on a national level is a huge endeavor and a little bit more open and obvious. But the local election, like we were talking about earlier, is really where the power is at. But even in more recent times, the Clarion Project has been very egregious. It's hosted articles from John D. Guandolo, who, for the past several years, who is an ex-FBI agent who has turned into an anti-Muslim activist. And he commented on the Christchurch shooting from just a little bit over a year ago, where, if anyone's not familiar with it, a literal alt-right fascist born from the internet posted a manifesto, recorded the event, and he shot up a mosque in Christchurch, New Zealand, killing over 50 people. It was terrible. We don't need to go over it in detail, but this is the commentary that John Guandolo left on his website. "The actions of the attacker in New Zealand were wrong, unlawful, and monstrous. But this also highlights the growing frustration in the West by citizens who feel helpless watching their communities being surrendered by their leaders to Islamic jihadists implementing barbaric Sharia, Islamic law, and destroying liberty, while security services not only fail to do their duty, they promote and support the jihadists by catering to their every request." This is straight up, like, the shooter, you know, made no, like, he didn't try to hide the fact that he was a fascist. He openly said it in his manifesto. But this Guandolo dude is just like trying to hide it a little bit, and he's openly associated with the Clarion Project, which has received funding from the Koch Dark Money Network. Like, this isn't just about politics. This is about how the right is. This is one explanation of why the right is so good at winning the culture wars, because they dump so much money into these organizations to disseminate propaganda to make us think that fascism is okay, and to make it palatable.
And they normalize it. And it sometimes even leaks in to the Democrats. It's like, if you look at the Affordable Health Care Act, the Affordable Care Act from Barack Obama, it's almost identical to a Heritage Foundation's plan from 1995. And it's just like, that's how much of an impact that they have on our politics. Their claws are deep into the GOP, but because their claws are so deep into the GOP, it forces Democrats to have to compromise with that crazy. And it's like, it's how we end up with, you know, some of these subpar policies like the Affordable Care Act, in my opinion. But I could go on that rant for a long time about that. But it's just like, it's like they are extremely powerful, especially the ones we listed. These are the ones that people pay attention to on the right wing the most. And there are liberal ones, or at least neoliberal ones from me, like Neer Tanden, or however you pronounce her name. She's a big spokesman for a liberal think tank. They do exist, but they're not quite as nefarious to me as the conservative ones. It's just like, you can give me a liberal think tank and I'll look at it and I'll be like, I don't agree with the policies, but I don't ever sense like just downright just evil, like all about bottom line, no thoughts of like absent of the worker in mind, or even void of any kind of human compassion. And that's what's so scary about these. And it's just like, there's tons of them out there. There's the Cato Institute, which is like, has a lot of influence over politics and especially libertarian thought.
And also the Cato Institute was like direct pet project of Charles Koch. Like, yeah, he was on the board, the founding board.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just like, they divided people left that, like you had Murphard and Rockwell leave that and start an even crazier think tank in the 80s. And it's just like, that's the way it is. It's like they propagate, they spread, and then they start getting into our politics, even at low levels. It's just like, we talked about how the Koch brothers, like, tentacles even just extend to even like the most basic local elections, because that's where politicians get break their teeth in the game, is in local elections. And it's like, that's why, like, I always advocate, like, yes, pay attention to national politics, but please pay attention to local ones too, because those are the up and comers of the parties in the future. And unfortunately, under, you know, and we can talk about the blame game, but unfortunately under Obama, we saw a huge takeover of Republicans taking over governorships, local congresses, even just like local, like metro boards and like stuff like that. And they play the long game, and they get a lot of their money, they get a lot of their ideas from these think tanks.
Mm-hmm. And we're also seeing it now with, especially with federal judges, with Trump and McConnell fast-tracking more conservative federal judges, more judges in general, in Trump's first 3 years than Obama appointed in his entire 8 years.
Yep.
Like, this is a long-term game, like you mentioned, and we're going to be feeling the repercussions of this for years, if not decades. We have a lot of damage to undo by Trump and his cronies. Yeah. And it's only going to make our fight as leftists harder to bring about a better society. And I think I think that real institutional, legislative, congressional threat posed by the Republicans is something that a lot of leftists, at least on Twitter anyways, really overlook.
I agree.
They completely underestimate the power of these dark money organizations and what they've been able to accomplish for just even the last two decades alone.
Yeah, it's like it's one of those things that you gotta look at in that state offices, even your town catcher, that is even a real position. Sure. It's
worth it. One second. You cut out right as you started talking with that point.
Okay. Well, it's like you gotta focus on all the picture, in my opinion. It's like you need to pay attention to the local elections, even if it's like a local dog catcher, if that's even still a thing, is that they all rise from those things. And leftists in particular, it's just like they focus on the prize, the big prize, the presidency. And that is a mistake, in my opinion, because you can have the presidency and not be able to do shit. Look at the last couple of years that Barack Obama was in office. He couldn't do shit because the Republicans controlled the Senate. The Republicans controlled the House. They controlled the governorships. They controlled the state legislations. There was no way. It's like, even if he passed something, a local legislation was going to fight. Especially, you like remember like when the ACA passed, like governors and local legislations blocked the Medicaid, the grant blocks to fund the shit.
Mm-hmm. And then they turned around on the ACA itself, like, oh, it was never effective in the first place. Never going to work. Well, they set it up for failure, and they even did that with the last basically year of Obama's presidency when a Supreme Court justice was up for appointment. And they basically said, no, we're not going to vote on it until the next presidency.
Yeah.
Like, you know, this is the obstructionist activity that Republicans are so good at.
Yeah, they're so fucking
good at it. And that gets overlooked so frequently because control the Biden narratives. Has brain worms.
Yeah, because Biden has brain worms. And while Biden may be slow on the uptick, it's just like, that's one of the things is Republicans have mastered the art of setting a dumpster fire and then saying, look at this big fucking dumpster fire. The Democrats' fault. It's proof that government doesn't work because the dumpster is on fire. Well, they fucking set it on fire. But they control the narrative so well that they, like, people forget. They're just like, oh yeah, the Republicans blew a hole in the deficit. And then when they inevitably, whether it is in this next year or whenever a Democrat is in office again, they're going to start screaming deficits, 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 even though they have blown a hole in the deficit in each administration that they've controlled. Like, anytime they're the president, like a Republican president happens, deficits happen. And then it's just like a Democrat comes in, they're like, we can't afford to pay for this. Well, why not? Deficits don't matter when Republicans are in charge. Deficits suddenly matter when Democrats are in charge. And it's up to Democrats, progressives, neoliberals, I don't care, centrists, whatever you want to call them. Everybody needs to call them out on this next time a Democrat's in power. And it doesn't matter when. When they start screaming deficits, everybody needs to be like, well, you created these. You can't say, oh, suddenly we can't afford this shit. Because we're seeing that right now of just like, if wanting another passing of a Corona stimulus bill, they're just like, we can't afford this. Well, we bailed out corporations. We've spent trillions of dollars into the stock market, into bailing out Ruth Chris and big corporate chains of whatever. And now that people need help, the money's not there. Or they say the money's not there. The printer suddenly broke.
Yeah, it suddenly broke after the Fed decided to print, what was it, $3-4 trillion out of thin air to kind of help pay for all these programs. But it's only the Democrats' fault when they can't pay for it. But under Trump, I mean, everything's permissible. everything under the sun. Yeah, and that's the real danger, and that's the real disappointment from Democrats is. Yeah, you know, I mean, we can rant about this forever, but I guess I'll try to close it off. Is that the Democrats are, whether intentionally or not, not an obstructionist party, opposition party, but they're a controlled opposition, and they don't really, because they don't really stand for anything. They're so easy to control, so they don't need to cry out about any kind of hypocrisy from Republicans, so long as the Democrats who are currently in power and safe wherever they are, as long as they can keep that status, they're okay. They don't really care whether or not Trump is reelected or not. And it's this perpetuation of the status quo, the inability to change anything at all, that allows them to be dragged further and further by the right, and they're not going to put up a fight about it. And it's these dark money groups that we just talked about that are driving, that are pulling our society to the right and winning the culture war. And I think that that's the biggest, probably the single biggest thing that we have to do as leftists, is to win the culture war going forward. That is going to be call them out, make fun of them, do whatever, bully the Nazis out of public eye, because that actually works more than anything. You can't reason with these people, you can't debate them. We're talking about the extremists anyways, right? The extreme Nazi people, you just bully those people out, like they don't exist. But like the conservatives who are concerned about the direction the country's headed, we can have a conversation with them, pull them over. We can show the Democrats and the liberals the shortcomings in their ideologies and show them, well, if you really do want equality or egalitarianism like you say you do, well, this is how your mindset has to change. We can talk to these people. They're not beyond hope. No one is really beyond hope, save for the extreme minority, and they are not worth considering other than to call their shit out when they do fake lynchings like at Andy Bashir's house. Mm-hmm. So the culture war is huge, and these conservative dark money groups already have a step ahead of us in the game, and we've got to step up our game. And we have the internet. The internet has come to fruition, at least in a great way, a great deal.
Except for when it comes to 5G.
Yeah, well, yeah, except for the 5G when our brains get cooked. That's, you know, going to be unfortunate, but an acceptable sacrifice for us to win the culture war.
But we can meme better once our brains are fucking fried by 5G and fucking COVID fucking surfboards into my fucking nostril from radio waves.
That's right. So, with that, thank you for listening to the absurdity of the 5G, and I hope you are in fact surfing on the airwaves in midair. That would be rad. You should tape that and upload it to Twitter.
Yeah. All right. And if you enjoy listening to us, rate us, give us a couple, 5 stars, 4 stars, whatever the fuck it is, on whatever streaming platform you use. It helps people find the show, and visit us at AmericanShakedown.com.